another edition of the Security Ledger podcast. I'm your host, Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. The annual Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, kicked off this week in Las Vegas. The show's 50th year is bigger than ever, with some 3,800 companies on hand, more than 100,000 attendees, and 2.6 million square feet of exhibit space. Smart devices designed to be connected to the Internet of Things are all the rage once again this year. Smart TVs and mobile phones are in abundance, of course, but there's a dizzying array of other gear, too, ranging from smart washer and dryer from Samsung to wearable technology to a concept car by Bosch that features face recognition and gesture control. Behind all the glitz and excitement of new products, features, and capabilities, however, lurks serious security and privacy concerns that experts agree will not be easy to resolve. As if to emphasize that, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, helped kick off CES with a lawsuit filed against D-Link, a major supplier of home routers and IP-enabled surveillance cameras, alleging the company's products were so insecure that they endangered the privacy and safety of U.S. consumers. D-Link, the FTC charged, was making false claims when it said its products featured advanced network security and were, quote, easy to secure. D-Link has called those charges baseless and said it will fight the FTC in court. How insecure are products like broadband routers and smart surveillance cameras? The Security Ledger sat down with three experts from the firm Senrio to discuss the matter. Senrio is one of the top firms investigating the security of embedded systems and has done seminal research on products by D-Link and other vendors. With us to talk about the FTC's case and CES are Stephen Ridley, founder and CTO of Senrio, Jameson Utter, Senrio's VP of Field Operations, and Margaret Carlton Foss, the Vice President of Research at the company. I started off by asking the three about the FTC case and what they thought the impact of the lawsuit against D-Link would be.
Yeah, so I think what the FTC, or FTC is actually doing here is a really great thing. I think what we've seen in the space is that there's no compelling business driver for why we should improve our security posture. These are low-cost devices, often rushed to market. There's no why should we be good at security, right? And I think the angle that the FTC took in the lawsuit, I actually read it, was they were pointing out that the marketing language that was used to describe the devices as secure and saying that this kind of constitutes false advertisements, essentially. And I think that's a good way to go because, you know, if the device had maybe not boasted any security whatsoever, then I think the FTC would kind of have a tenable case. And maybe you could, like, in a grander scheme of things, you could, you know, go after companies that whose devices participate in botnets, for example, and maybe claim that they represent a threat to the public health or, you know, critical infrastructure or whatever.
Right.
But by positioning it this way, I think they really have a strong claim. It doesn't feel like they're reaching at all. And it's something I think we all kind of anticipated was going to happen in some form or fashion. And then kind of categorically what they do is, you know, they start abroad and say, well, we're going to poke holes in your claims that your devices are secure. Here's the proof for it. But the proof that they then provide is in several different forms, as you mentioned earlier. So like the embedded encryption keys, so poor handling of credentials, in some cases backdoors installed in the devices. They didn't really emphasize that too much. They also didn't really emphasize like the code vulnerabilities, but what I know they've done in the past when they settled with Asus was like required them to go through their products to go through more rigorous code audits. That's definitely going to be a component, I think. So they kind of outlined those categories. And one of the things that we actually, not just myself, but Jameson, which is why I wanted to have him join, one of the things that he's been saying when he speaks to our customers or anyone who is interviewing him is he's calling it hygiene, basic hygiene.
Right.
You know, where the public health, medical health, flu, influenza, you know, communicable diseases and stuff were largely curbed not just by antibiotics and better pharmaceuticals, but it was also just public awareness of what germs were and how to, like, wash your hands. How to do basic food handling safely. That like had a huge effect on just increasing public health. And so Jameson's take on it, which I really like, is that what we need for IoT is some basic hygiene requirements. Things like don't handle your encryption keys a certain way. Make sure that the hard-coded credentials are changeable by the user or based on something unique to the device, maybe a MAC address or something. Make sure you don't have any backdoor credentials embedded in the device. And so, like I said, Jameson might be able to elucidate on that a little bit more, but those basic things would get us in a lot better security posture as it comes to kind of these consumer devices, I think. And I think that's kind of what the FTC is aiming at here by kind of positioning their argument that way.
You've looked at a lot of products like the products that were cited today, broadband routers, smart, you know, internet-connected security cameras. How common are the problems that were identified with these D-Link devices when you look across this category of smart connected home products?
In our experience as collectively as a firm, not just my personal experience, a lot of the vulnerabilities in the D-Link devices and devices like the D-Link revolve around, at a higher level, the simplest ones. Command injection were pretty epidemic early on in some of the early D-Link products. I know the guys at the Tactical Network Solutions had actually a D-Link tag on their blog where they would essentially just enumerate these really stupid, simple vulnerabilities in the D-Link products. Many of them were just simple command injection vulnerabilities. Like string parsing wasn't being done properly, so you could pass arguments into the command line on the device just from the web URLs, for example, or via like an NTP or ping command or something inside the web console. And then they also have had a bunch of vulnerabilities, web vulnerabilities. So like you could force browse to a firmware update page unauthenticated, for example, and then just flash the firmware of the device without having to log into the device first. So they've had a whole series of just really bad vulnerabilities for quite a while. And then, you know, getting into the more nuanced vulnerabilities, complicated vulnerabilities, like the one that Margaret found and that we published as a company last year, that's more of a code execution vulnerability. The simpler bugs that I just mentioned at the beginning, those are just, there's no excuse why vulnerabilities like that should exist in really popular consumer products. And I think the FTC, by kind of omitting the code execution vulnerabilities, the binary exploitation vulnerabilities from the emphasis in their report, that's essentially what they're saying is, let's get rid of these really stupid, simple vulnerabilities and just try to, you know, raise the bar a bit. But that said, I think D-Link, much like many of these other vendors, are not doing things like firmware code audits. So that if you are looking at the binary exploitation class of vulnerabilities on these devices, they tend to be simple vulnerabilities, ones that the public might even know of, like Stack Overflow vulnerabilities. So there's even some improvement to be made there, even though those attacks or those vulnerabilities are slightly more complex than like the command injection types of vulnerabilities.
Margaret, you know, people might read these headlines and say, oh my gosh, I got a D-Link router or camera in my house. How concerned should they be about the practical impact of these vulnerabilities? How easy would it be for an attacker to take advantage of them?
Well, that entirely depends on what their setup is. If they are patching their devices regularly, if they have their camera set up on their local network, then they're probably okay. If they've let their router go for a little while, they haven't been installing updates, or they have a camera installed outside of a firewall, then maybe there is cause for concern. But for the average user, not many will be directly affected.
Obviously, the CES conference is going on in Las Vegas this week, and there are a lot of news about new products and cool new gadgets. Common denominator seems to be internet connectivity in one form or another. What is your expectation or assumption about the underlying quality of those products? Do you think we're likely to find some of the similar problems as we find in these, you know, this class of products, home routers, smart IP cameras, and so on?
Definitely. I think that is almost a given. We, in 2014, had two interns that joined the company. And as a summer project, we basically gave them a budget. These are interns that had never done security work before. They, with a small budget of around $2,000, just purchased devices from Amazon and, you know, Alibaba, all these Craigslist, all these online stores, based on their popularity and just their general interest in a device like IoT home controllers, webcams, and whatnot. By the end of the summer, the interns had compromised 90% of the devices. And because they aren't veteran security people, they didn't even need to do complex things like binary exploitation, which is, you know, what we were just talking about. They were doing simple command injection vulnerabilities, pulling credentials out of the firmware, hard-coded passwords that log into backing cloud infrastructure. All that stuff was like kind of just scattered throughout these devices. And I think that says a lot, that interns who've never done any security work by the end of the summer can compromise 90% of the devices that they take a look at. So if I were to your question, if I had to guess, I imagine that many of the devices at CES are vulnerable to similar types of simple bugs.
How big of a stick does the FTC have, do you think, just judging from your work in the space, to compel better behavior or raise standards? I mean, this isn't the first case they've brought. Trendnet was another smart camera vendor that they sued successfully. They got a whole bunch of products. I saw their CES announcements going out, so they're still around. You know, CES and the consumer electronics space in general is kind of a juggernaut. What ability does a regulator like the FTC have to change or blunt the forward march of that juggernaut with, you know, entreaties to be more secure and use better coding, you know, practices and do audits and pen test your product and all those types of good things?
Yeah, I think that I'll actually let Jameson respond to that.
Sure. I feel like they overall, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like long term, do they have the ability to fix the situation? Zero, right? Like I really think if you said, could you attribute that? But impact the situation? A lot. So I think those suits, like the one we just saw, the one you talk about in the past, there was one against the SUS just this last year, very similar. I believe those have an influence on the industry long term. And I think that's what we'll really begin to see is as the FTC begins to call them out, we can get some things like the OTA Alliance just released their 2.0 version of IoT security. At some point, what will happen is people will congeal around some of those ideas and that'll help motivate that motion. People will say these frameworks help us not get sued by the FTC. So will we use that framework, right? And hopefully they adopt a good framework that makes that happen.
So I think one thing to also add is that from a business standpoint, I mean, if we look at this, what the FTC effectively has done is change the cost-benefit ratio of having security in their products. You know, previously there was no, like I said earlier, there was no driver. There was no compelling reason to have any security stature whatsoever. The stuff that they already had was almost altruistic in nature, right? Or just for ease. So let's use SFTP instead of FTP because we already have SFTP on the firmware. Perfect. Let's go. And it's more secure and we can market it. But now the FTC, having taken these actions, I think give not just a framework for manufacturers to kind of look at, but it's also it's given vendors a reason to pause and say, well, you know, if we spend X amount of dollars on security, we can avoid an X plus or X squared cost if we have to defend ourselves from some kind of litigation or class action suit or something. And so in that way, it's speaking to the bottom line of the business, which is money, right? We want to save money. And now security could potentially save us money.
So it's interesting what Stephen just said, I think, is actually the long-term fix for the industry is it has to be an economic imperative to apply security into the network at the cheapest point, right? Yeah. And by cheapest point, I mean the router I gave you for free, not just the one you purchased for extra money, right? Like we have to get to that point where the one I give you has that consideration at the core. And economic driver is the only way that's going to happen.
Okay. I mean, one of the big issues that seems to be debated or talked about, and I was talking with Craig Spiezel at OTA about this, is sort of the law. And Margaret, I know you mentioned this when you spoke to our meetup Was like the management of these devices over time, that seems to be an area where many of these companies fall down. So they put the products out there into the environment, but they don't have a good or easy way to manage them actively. So firmware updates are more or less up to the customer to obtain and apply on their own. And as we know, very few customers have the technical wherewithal to do that. Is that part of the picture as well of improving the security of this ecosystem to get vendors more actively managing devices rather than passively managing them?
I have 40 devices in my home today, and I'm somewhat smart homed, right? As we move into this new future, we have enterprises and home users having thousands and millions of connected, not just, you know, routers or whatever, right? But I'm talking about IoT sensors and cameras and, you know, actuators and all those sorts of things everywhere. Patching that sort of infrastructure at any scale is beyond anything we can understand how to do today. I'm not saying in the future we won't figure out how to do that. Somebody will make billions of dollars when they figure out how to effectively do that, right? Because we can't do it today, right? We're obviously not managing patches well right now with the number of devices that manufacturers and vendors and enterprises put out. Enterprises are way behind the patching. So as we increase that scale astronomically, geometrically, patching has to be something that we think about as a, boy, I hope we can do it. Because today, it's already a hope we can do it, right? Am I wrong, Stephen? We're not doing a good job now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd also kind of add to that a little bit the problem now just isn't just that it's difficult to do patch management, but it's also that these devices are in places where it's a tough problem to solve. Like it may be a device with sporadic connectivity, for example. It might be a device with slow connectivity. You can't afford to download 128 meg firmware image without, you know, affecting the performance of the device or whatever, or just taking a really long time. It's also, you know, that some of these devices require some, like the patching isn't automatable, if you will. What we see with a lot with like webcams and whatnot is that those devices are on a network that maybe, even though it's a IP network, it's still technically closed circuit camera. It's not connected to the internet, right? It's connected to a network, but not the internet. So then you have to, you know, how do you do patch management in that case? If it can't call home to the manufacturer to get the update, then you have to have some kind of local instantiation of the update system or do it via thumb drives, which is, you know, a lot of devices these days. So it's not just that we don't have a framework in place to do these kinds of things smarter. It's that the devices themselves sometimes dictate to you what you can even do.
I think that, Paul, that we're right on the verge of this new reality in computing in the world. The number of devices, the way they're connected, the amount of connectivity. But our security thinking is still very old world. And I don't mean like old world like, I don't know, a year ago. I mean old world like traditionally people are still thinking about firewalls and VLANs and that being their security. And that world's gone. We live in this mesh of interconnected devices that communicate all the time and everywhere. Yeah, there's no perimeter, right? Where's the edge? Yeah. There's no edge, right? Like, so we have to start thinking differently. And some of that's going to require solutions that are long-term. And the FTC, I think their move pushes us that way, right? But they're still years out. In the meantime, what we have to do is actually just accept the reality of today and use solutions that we have available that are part of that new reality. Stop trying to make the new devices and this new digital society conform to our old way of thinking.
Hey, thanks to all of you for coming in and speaking with us.
Sure. Thanks for your time, Paul.
We were speaking today with Stephen Ridley, the founder and chief technology officer at Senrio, as well as Jameson Utter, the company's VP of field operations, and Margaret Carlton Foss, the vice president of research.